Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
Say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars it is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, "What y'all finna do?" He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb, many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to... I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people. Thank you.
2020. Happy New Year and Happy New Decade. Today, well, we're going to keep it kind of loose, but the working title that we have is how to make NBA, NFL, or MBL, excuse me, yeah, MLB money. That's National Basketball Association, National Football League, or National League Baseball money in 2020. 619-768-2945 or 319-527-4961. Now, we're going to lay out a basic business model that they all use, but you don't have to be an athlete or even interested in sports to adopt this model. As a matter of fact, many social networkers, whether they know it or not, use this model already to earn a pretty good monthly income. So we'll be back in a few minutes. We're going to play Ballin' on Baltic. This is the first day of the year, so I'm just trying to set a positive tone. Anyway, we'll be back in a few minutes with open phone lines.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word, because as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo, because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been, and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
Shit, dude. Keep that bitch on your face. Yeah, dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat our motherfucking ass. She feel like you a motherfucking nigga. Beat our motherfucking ass.
Yeah, that nigga can't. That nigga hurting himself.
You from Nuke State.
It's over. It's over. When I say it's over, everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck it. Let's go across the street.
Now, who got
brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you could do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations, like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield. See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, The Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them, which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place. There's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
Right. Happy 2020. New year, January 1st, 2020. Happy new decade. And today's podcast is titled, let me give you the title first. How to make NBA, NFL, or MLB money in 2020. For those of you who are not familiar with those alphabets, NBA, NFL, and NBL, that stands for National Basketball Association, NFL, National Football Association, and Major League Baseball. Many of the players in those leagues earn, $1 million incomes. Some do it in a year, yearly, some do it over the life of their contract. most of these professions have short lifespans. Matter of fact, let me look it up right now. Average number of years for, let's see, NBA player, NBA career. Let's see, the average NBA career is 4.9 years. Just short of 5 years. You know, but let's round it out. So the average NBA career is 5 years. Okay. Hold it. The average NBA career is about 4.5 years. Four and a half, 5 years. Let's go with the NFL. That's football. That's a little bit more. Average NFL career is 3.3 years. And then let's go with baseball. MLB. .6 years. All right, so baseball has the, you know what, let me go to soccer. Not long, people. Okay, let me see professional soccer. The average professional soccer player retires around 35, and they get 8 years. All right. That's the world's most popular sport. But today we're going to concentrate on, we're going to take a look at NBA, NFL, and NBL. Now, I'm looking at their business models, or a fundamental part of their business model, that you can apply to what you want to do business-wise, and you don't have to be interested in sports at all. You don't have to play sports at all. We're interested in a fundamental part of their business model. And this ties into the Balling on Baltic thing. Let me give some statistics out here. All right, in the NFL has 32 communities. Now, they're in, some people looking at, they're in 32 cities. They are in 32 cities. But essentially, a ball club, even on a high school or middle school level, it's a community of people. It's a small community of people. In a school setting, it's a community, because that's what a school is. A school is a collection of communities. You got the chess club, the basketball team, football team, drama club, debate team, academic team. Schools are basically a collection of a collection of communities. On the high school level, same thing. On the college level, and it's truly a universe. You know, the foreign language people, foreign exchange students, it's school settings, even on online, they are basically a collection of communities. So, and we're going to go through the NFL, NBA, and NBL for purposes of how you can apply this towards your business, and you don't have to be interested in sports. You don't even have to know how to play any sports. But business is a team sport. So the NFL has 32 communities. Now, I'm classifying a team as a community. Because if you look online, particularly when you hear these numbers, there are towns and villages that mirror the numbers I'm going to give you. So the NFL, National Football League, has 32 communities. They average 53 active people per community, and those are teammates. okay, 53 people per community. They played 16 games per season. They pay, at league-wise, they play 256 total games per season. And they're a total of 1,696 players in the NFL. Let's go to the NBA, National Basketball Association. There are 30 communities. What most people call a town, a team, I'm calling a community. There are a total of 439 total players in the NBA. The average active NBA roster has 15 people. Now, once again, that's a community. Let's say 15 households. 15 households. Because each one of those players does represent a household. They play 82 games a year, and there are 1,230 total games per season in the NBA between those 30 communities. Major League Baseball, there are 30 communities. On average, 25 people per community. Those are the players. They play 162 games per year. League-wise, they play 2,340 total games. Now, what I'm saying to you is that this is the first day of the year. Because we're applying this business model, fundamental business model. You need to organize a community. Whatever you want to do, your advisable first step, in my opinion, or one of the first steps, if not the first step, is to organize a community. You don't need a whole lot of people. Okay, like I say, the NBA, now, I'm not including the front office, because the front office, which is critical, the front office is the one that has the business side of all these entities, where they market the tickets, sell seats, have special packages, they're out into the community, and if it wasn't for the front office part of the community, you wouldn't get nothing. Simple as that. So the front office is very important. But for simplification purposes, and we're going to go through this again tomorrow, maybe Friday. We're starting off with the players because people identify with that, and we just build from there. So, like I said, you know, these numbers, 25 people, I mean, people have had house. Look, we're still in the holidays. No, we're not. This is January 1st. Okay. Over the holidays, there were office parties or house parties where there were 25 people in the house, 15 people in the house, maybe 15 people over for dinner. At some bigger events, maybe 53 people came through. But the NBA, which has the largest paychecks per player, it's just 15 active players per team. There are towns around the globe that have 15 people, that have 877 people, or that have 53 people. There are more towns that have, I'm going to say, 15 to 53 people than there are towns like New York that's got millions of people. In the United States, Canada, all around the world, it's even online. You have YouTubers that are knocking down six figures per month from their online community. So if you want to add some commas to your commas and zeros to your paycheck this year, or revenue this year, personal income, I highly advise the first step is form a community. Every community starts with one person, that's you. You don't need a whole lot of people. You know, start with yourself and recruit another one. And, you know, you might be able to work things out with three or four people. Believe it or not, there are towns that have a population of three households. There's a bunch of them. In Germany, they call them Dorf. I've seen them. The village, they, you know, on that scale, they call them villages because you have distinction. You got villages, you got towns, you got cities. And depending on where you are in the world, all of them have different definitions. But in Germany, you have Dorf, D-O-R-F. The smallest one I've run across was just four people. There's several that have maybe 15 to 19 households. That's it. That's for a village. But that's basically what, that's the makeup to a large degree of probably any country. Little, small community. So the same principle, matter of fact, it balling on Baltic Avenue, that's one of the reasons why I play it, because they're talking about the Monopoly game. The very first thing in a board game of Monopoly is you got to form, when you got four players that sit down, that's the first act. You need the community of four people to play the game. Now you can have the board and be by yourself, but no wealth is generated or created if you're sitting by yourself. So balling on Baltic, the most fundamental thing you can do is that community. You got to, whoever, if let's say you want to play Monopoly today, you got a board, and you want to play a basic full game with four people, you got to recruit three other people. Call three friends up, knock on a neighbor's door, get online, what have you, and then you get three more players, and you got a community of four, then you can play Monopoly. Then you can take the lessons that you learned in the sanitized game of Monopoly and try to apply it to real-life situations, as in balling on Baltic, which is one of the reasons why I play that audio so much. Then the Nine Friends audio that I've played quite a bit, same thing. How was this guy able to renovate, fix a rupper in a matter of hours? He called his friends over, his community. He tapped into his community. And God knows how many people showed up in those nine pickup trucks. We know bare minimum nine people were there. But some of those pickup trucks could have had two or more people. Let's say if it averaged two people per truck, that's 18 people. Tapped into his, so that's the first thing, the way I see it, that you've got to organize. Whatever New Year's resolution or goal that you have, more than likely you're not going to achieve it as a lone wolf. You're going to have to organize a community. And now you got tools. I mean, well, there have always been tools, but it's really been simplified these days. It's easier to do. Simpler to do. Might not be, and you know what, easier. We still got to put some work into it. I mean, Facebook alone's got 1 billion people. Then there are countless of websites and social media sites and, oh, YouTube, there's all kind of ways to organize a community quicker these days due to the internet and the electronics that practically everybody has, and then everybody has access to. Almost everybody has access to. So in any event, that's the first step. Organize a community And now we'll go through this in a little bit more detail tomorrow. But until you do that, well, you know what? That's the first step. That's the first step. Okay, first podcast of the year 2020. All right, Robin is off the radar this morning. But she might be calling in, I don't know. 314, your mic is open. Happy New Year, happy 2020, happy new decade.
Yeah, same to you, LA. How you doing today?
Not bad. It's a sunny day out there today, so that's good.
Robin's probably someplace Robin's probably someplace eating greens, collard greens, and hog head.
Ooh, this early in the morning? Well, that's a cast iron stone to be eating at this time of day.
That's for tradition on New Year's Day. Women go around and try to get a man to come in their house so that they have good luck the rest of the year.
Well, I guess there was a lot of that going on last night.
Yes, Major League. Huh?
And even today, people, you know.
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
Yeah, Major League Baseball's got a good pension.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with their pensions. How does that work?
Well, if you called up to the major and you there for 43 days, that automatically qualifies you for, I think, a $35,000 a year pension. Then, of course, if you're there for a number of years, you can get up to about $8,000 a month.
That's pretty good money.
If your credited service is from 13 to 20 years and you retire at 65, that's $8,139.
Now, a number of those players league-wide go bust within 5 years. I don't know if that applies to the NBA or professional sports in general.
Well, that's up to the individual. That's what they do. That's what they do. But if you don't, actually you can get more money than that. Depends on what class you're in. Let's see, it was 1992. You can get up to $10,000 on this class. Heck, it's the work just way up to 14.5. I'm just looking at these charts. I know Bernard Gilkey, he played for the Cardinals. He deferred his. I think his is like $1 million a year.
Okay, here's some interesting statistics. According to the 2009 Sports Illustrated article, 78% of the National Football League players are either bankrupt or under financial stress within 2 years of retirement. An estimated 60% of the NBA, National Basketball Association players, go bankrupt within 5 years of leaving the sport.
Well, that's individual. The money's there. If they blow it, they blow it.
Yeah. You know what? Here's my take on that. I played basketball in college. I went on a scholarship. I think it should be mandatory that before getting to be eligible for the draft, you should be a four-year graduate. Now, that's not all. Within that, there should be some mandatory classes that you should take. St- starting off with accounting 101, business 101, which includes management, some basic financial literacy classes, but accounting 101 would be number that included in your 4 year, and you got to graduate before you're eligible for the draft. Because if you give, it doesn't even have to be $1 million contract. It doesn't even have to be a $50,000 a year contract. You give $50,000, matter of fact, I'm going to even lower this. You can give a $15,000 contract to the typical horny 18-year-old. They're going to blow that. Just on women. And I'm not even getting on to the hanger-oners in the family. You know, I need this and that, and mama and all this, that. I'm talking about the money in the hands, 18, and I've been an 18-year-old man. You don't think straight at that age. And particularly if you're not financially literate, you know, you don't know anything about accounting. You know what, business law. Contracts, all those should be required classes in addition to graduating with whatever degree you're going to graduate with. Because the one thing Umar Johnson says is white people wishing that black people get reparations. This is what happens to a lot of young players that come out of high school or enter into the NBA, even if they graduated, but they don't have any type of financial literacy at all. They're totally financially illiterate. They might be basketball geniuses or sports geniuses, but when it comes to finance, they're financial illiterate. The money's going to be there, and every man has a weakness. And a lot of males fall prey, particularly at a young age, to spending it on women.
I don't know what this federal limits. The federal government put limits on the amount of pension a person can receive, too. Did you know that?
Did not know that.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's another course that should be mandatory before they be eligible. A class on pensions, how they work. Because the typical 20-something-year-old is not thinking about 20, 30, 40 years, 50 years down the pike. They're not thinking that way.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking, when can I get the next paycheck? And if they got any, and most of them do have women that probably don't have their best interest in mind, they're thinking about when's the next paycheck going. And then, oh, God, how many? Anyway, but that's my take on it. I think it's an automatic setup. It's an automatic setup. You're giving these millions of dollars to these people that are totally financially illiterate.
And if you marry, if you married a woman yesterday, she would be eligible for your pension today. Her spousal benefits.
And how many parents are these players going into professional sports will tell them that? You know, very few. Because it's mind-boggling, the players who have had $25 million contracts, $100 million contracts, 90-something million broke before 30.
And if you after you retire and you go back into service, every April your benefits are recalculated, because while you're in service, you're contributing to it. That's on Social Security, too.
Right. Matter of fact, let's see if I can track down. See, you know more about it than, well, your grandson's gotten a lot of good guidance from you and gets it from you. Because you're exposing to the type of thinking that
I met a brother down here yesterday that's a pilot. he says there's an African American certified flight instructor. He told me to look up when I got ready for him to start taking flying lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he still played baseball. He also told me he wanted to be commissioner of baseball one day, so.
Now, that's thinking smart and thinking out of the box. Okay, we're going to take a short break here. We're going to come back to this, and we're going to get some other callers.
Years ago, we broadcast the story about Marva Collins, a Chicago teacher who started her own elementary school on the city's west side, West Side Prep. Marva claimed that with love, hard work, and no-nonsense teaching, inner-city children could compete with anyone academically. It was, to many people, quite an inspiring story. But not to Charles Murray, author of the controversial book about race and intelligence called The Bell Curve. On page 399, Murray writes that Marva's celebrated anecdotes about her students are too good to be true, that there is no hard evidence of her success. We decided to check it out. Before we begin, let's go back to where we began 16 years ago.
You have it all here on West Adams Street, all the familiar big city blight. The forever broken windows, the burnt out flats, the disemboweled abandoned cars. And then you have 3819 West Adams.
The Canterbury Tales are about whom?
Jeffrey Jones.
They're about whom? How many were there?
29.
There are no frills at West Side. The emphasis is on basic education, with an even stronger emphasis on literature and composition. There are no teacher breaks, no teacher desks. She is on her feet and over their shoulders all day, pushing them, cajoling them, and praising them.
Very, very good, Lisa. Very, very good. Cum laude.
And the results are apparent even to a casual bystander. Alert and challenged children being pushed way beyond the boundaries most school systems set.
Who's your favorite author?
Jeffrey Chaucer and Shakespeare.
Booker T. Washington and Hans Christian Andersen. My favorite book is The Greek Myth.
Greek myths.
I like Fyodor Dostoevsky and Dante Alighieri and Shakespeare.
And your favorite book?
Divine Comedy.
I like Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, and I like Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre.
So what happened to those 34 students we met at West Side Prep? Charles Murray says by implication that their apparent intelligence and promise was a fraud, that what we saw was just too good to be true. What was it? We traced 33 of the 34 and flew a group of them back to Chicago, back to West Side Prep's new location for a reunion of sorts.
Aren't you pretty?
To see if Charles Murray's allegations in The Bell Curve are true, to see whether or not these young men and women lived up to Marva's claim. Christopher Stubblefield.
We learned to read hard words.
The 8-year-old with the big voice is now at university in Texas. And Erica McCoy Pace graduated last spring from Norfolk State University. When you saw her last, she was listing her favorite authors.
Emerson, Henry David Thoreau.
And what about the rest of our class of 79?
Michael Anderson, Taylor.
Terry Holmes, own operator of transportation company.
Latanya Singleton, preschool teacher.
James Lowe, staff sergeant, United States Air Force.
Sabrina Yates, sixth grade teacher.
Rossell Winters, law student.
Louis Johnson, operations manager.
Xavier Jones, teacher, criminal justice major.
Craig Brunner, clerk for the state's attorney's office.
I remember I had said in front of all my classmates here that I want to become an attorney. And it's funny, I'm actually in law school, and I graduate next year. And this college told me, oh, yes, you can do it. You can do whatever you want to do. It's possible, and I'm living proof it is possible.
A number of you are teachers. Were you inspired by her to become teachers?
Definitely. She just gave so much to me personally in terms of always being reassuring. I mean, just the small things, like she would grab my face and say, pretty girl.
You're brilliant.
Yes.
You're brilliant.
That's right.
Especially Craig. She would take his head and raise it up. Speak up, honey. You're brilliant.
Right.
And, you know, after someone telling you that.
Every day.
Every day.
5 days
a week. For 3 or 4 years. You know, that's in you. That becomes a part of you. You are brilliant, honey.
And then we were like doing Shakespeare. We put on the plays. We had the
3 weeks.
But Charles Murray stated that claims of long-term academic achievement would typically fade as these children grow up.
Sagacious means what? Means you're very what?
Right. The words that we learned, it was nice because when we left and we heard someone talking, using a word, we knew what that word meant. And now in school, a lot of times we get the reading list on the course outline. I've read most of the books on that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I've read that, I read that, or the teacher will be talking about something. And I'm like, oh, yeah, 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 I read that book.
Fourth
All
grade.
The students may feel like this.
I gather, where's Xavier?
Right here.
You use your notes? Your West Side prep notes on Hamlet to write a paper when?
I used it in high school, and I also used it in an English lit class when I was in college. And looking back at my handwriting, I was like, wow, you know. And I was like, these are good notes.
Murray also raised questions about Marva's claims that 5- and 10-year-olds who'd been labeled unteachable were capable of reading Chaucer and Shakespeare. Well, Michael Anderson was said to have a learning disability when he entered Marva's school at age 9.
I had a client just a couple months ago brought up Shakespeare out of nowhere. And we sat after having coffee for 3 hours. You know? Well, what did you learn Shakespeare? Fourth grade. I knocked him off his seat. He couldn't believe it. Fourth grade?
And there is Erica, who is considered a hopeless case at age 6.
Basically, I was told that I was borderline retarded, that I would never read. So I was basically written off.
I was supposed to be put back a couple of grades, but I wasn't when I came to Ms. Collins.
When we saw Craig Brunner in 1979, he was reading his essay about Cleopatra.
Very, very long ago, there was a queen called...
What was the secret of her success, of motivation, or what?
The confidence, how you have a brain, you can do it on your own. You don't have to wait for anybody.
She killed herself with a poisonous snake.
Very, very true.
I say to every child, for example, Morley, there's no one with your eyes. There's no one with your nose. There's no one with your hair. That makes you really special. Then we
These days, her message and methods are repeated by teachers she's trained for her 3 elementary schools in Chicago. She is mostly on the road, giving seminars for teachers all over the country. Above all, she tells them every child is teachable. Every child can learn.
Ask the slowest children in your class how many children know the rap songs, and they all raise their hands, and I'll say them for me. And I said, good. If you can do that, you can learn the Canterbury Tales in Old English, too. I don't know half of what those rap songs are saying, but they know every line. What makes us think, then, that they become such learning disabilities when they get to school?
But Charles Murray...
I miscalculated that time. Ugh. All right. In any event, we're going to go more into detail about this tomorrow and tie in examples of what you can do to form communities, excuse me, online and offline, where you can have a fundamental business model. Because with your community, once you form your community, essentially, a lot of your material needs for your business as well as your personal household needs can be met right through that community. So you're not going to pull this off being a lone wolf. So, like I said, we'll go into more of that tomorrow, Thursday. Oh, wait a minute. You know what? I'm trying to... Let me see. I was putting out a... See if someone would call in. Hold it. I mean, let's see. 2945... To chime in on this from a, I'm using sports because yeah, a lot of people are interested in sports, but they don't talk about the business side of it. So, let's see, I just sent out a text for that. but it's the first where I'm at. It's a sunny day. It is the temperature outside where I'm at. Let me get the latest. It was 52 degrees earlier this morning. It's 66 degrees outside now. I'm in Central Florida. And it's supposed to get up to 70 degrees by 3 p.m. this afternoon. So, T-shirt weather for some, light jacket or hoodie weather for others. Who are down in this neck of the woods. And coming up this year, we got Pleasant Stephens. He'll be, you know what? Let me see if I can reach Pleasant this morning. We haven't heard because he's been taking care of his health. I don't know if he's not going to do anything. You know what? It's the new year right now. So, Pleasant Stephens. Let me see if I can get him to call in. All right, I already got one thing out here. Let's see. I wanted to make the call. All right, well, hold. Let me play some War and let me see if we can get Pleasant Stephens and one other person on. We'll be right back. Okay, well, I'm not getting much cooperation out of that first day of the year. I think things will kick back into normal tomorrow morning. Before we go back to the line, let's see. This is something from The Wire.
Are you still fucking that bitch?
Yeah, burning like hell, man. And you gonna burn the bitch back. Oh,
get that check Slim, bro.
Slim!
B, what up?
Alright.
Boo.
It's good.
Heard you out.
Yeah.
Welcome home.
Thanks, dog. And you with Prop Joe now. Never would have thought.
Yeah, well, life's strange.
Yeah. Holla.
Bodie, how you on Marlo? You okay with him?
As far as I know, yeah. Why?
What he did to your boy.
What boy you talking?
Big boy. The one rub his hands together all the time.
Kevin? What about him?
You ain't heard? Chris and Snoop walked him down an alley. He in a vacant man.
How you know that?
I seen him lay hands on the boy. And now the word out in the street. Sorry, dog. Let's roll.
I called because I heard you went and visited Donette.
No.
Told him my son's death couldn't have been no suicide, is that right?
I did do that.
D'Angelo hung himself.
Not with the belt they found around his neck. Not at that distance between the doorknob and the floor.
So what are you saying?
What am I saying?
No. Nobody would have dared. My brother, his uncle, would have...
I agree with you. Nobody would have dared. Unless...
Avon and Dee was family.
Family, right.
This is just you talking, right? I mean, anyone else saying it?
No, it's just me. No one else cares.
Right.
It's just, I don't know, on the inside. Somebody's going after you. He's got a beef, sees red, they use a shank. It's quick, and it's over. D'Angelo was strangled, which is planned. You need the time, you need the isolation. Look, I'm just sorry I brought this whole mess up to begin with, because frankly, no one's going to do shit about it anyhow. Whoever killed him wanted to pass it off as a suicide, and the cops are happy enough to have one less murder to investigate. On top of that, the Anne Arundel state's attorney doesn't give a fuck. I'm not supposed to give a fuck, so... guess your son just got squeezed between the sides.
Squeezed between what sides?
Look, 2 years ago, we hung more wire on your brother's crew than AT&T. And at the end, D'Angelo was this close to flipping, giving up everybody, everything. You know all that, right? You were the one who went down that detention center and talked your son out of a deal. I kind of liked your son, you know. All things considered, he was a pretty decent kid. And it grinds me that no one ever spoke up for him. Seems to me that nobody ever will. But mostly at this point, I'm sorry I bothered his girl. And I'm sorry she bothered you.
Why go to her? Why not come to me first?
Honestly? I was looking for somebody who cared about the kid. I mean, like I said, you were the one who made him take the years, right?
So you ain't gonna say nothing on it?
What is there to say?
Avon, this is blood. Family.
I know it.
And I'm telling you that someone may have done this to us, Avon. To our family.
The cop's just saying that shit.
To mess with your head.
Exactly.
Why? That cop don't know me for shit. What the hell am I to him?
He know you're gonna want to think this thing that D, you know, he wouldn't do what he did.
I do think it. Was it some beef he had? Someone on the inside? That cop said it was someone who didn't want you to know. And so they made it look like it did.
Nobody did nothing.
But the cop said...
He's lying. He paid to lie.
Avon, you are my brother. I need to know this more than anything. Dee did not roll on us. He came to the edge, but he turned around and walked away. And I know he was willing to do what he had to for his family, for us. But I need to know that you know that. That you saw him that way.
What? What are you trying to say?
If something happened...
The fuck are you even thinking? That I had something to do with it? I could do that to my own kin? Is that what you fucking think? The fuck is in your head? I ain't do nothing to D. I ain't had shit to do with it.
To do with what? To do with what?
Whatever happened. Whatever it is that happened, Brianna.
You all the way out here, huh? Started out thinking you was in Jersey. You ain't in Jersey. I figure they still got you down in Central Booking. All the way out here. You send a message, though.
Yeah, well, a message needs sending. How y'all even find me?
Ain't no one gonna keep a mother from her son, right?
You know, he always talking family. Family is the heart, he say. Well, I'm family, ain't I? Well, what about me for once? It ain't right.
What's right? You like him to step up? Take all the weight and let you walk? 'Cause he will. You know he will. But if he gotta go away, that means you got to step up and fill his shoes. You ready for that?
Ma, you know I ain't. I ain't ready, and I ain't never gonna be ready for this game.
Dee, come on.
Look, they giving me a chance to walk away, to start again someplace else.
And what you giving them? He messed up, Dave. He knows it. Now, if you want to get even with him, you can. But you hurt him, you hurt this whole family. All of us. Me and Trina and the cousins. And Donette, too. And your baby. Your own baby boy. This right here is part of the game, Dee. And without the game, His whole family would be down in the fucking terrace living off scraps. Shit, we probably wouldn't even be a family. Start over, huh? How the fuck are you gonna start over without your peoples? Without your own child, even? You ain't got family in this world. What the hell you got?
Okay, put the asshole on.
This is he.
Where's the rice-a-roni? Ma, where's the rice-a-roni?
There's some boy in the stoop looked like he was starving.
So you cooked it for him?
Nah, I just gave it to him.
Just gave it to him? Boy ate a raw box of rice-a-roni. How much did you sell the groceries for?
Don't look at me like that. I gotta go out.
You have your rice-a-roni profit.
Michael, come on. Boy, I ain't gonna let you hold the DSS card if you ain't gonna do right by me.
You gonna let me hold that card?
You a hard child.
Next time, don't go selling the food out of our mouths. Where am I at?
Upstairs. Michael, my daddy came home.
Daddy came?
Look who home.
Michael.
All right, we're going to talk about that on another podcast. Those, all the last three audios were from the TV show The Wire on dysfunctional family situations. Let's see, we're going to wrap it up for today. Let me take Pianki as the last caller here. Pianki, any words of wisdom?
Oh, no, you not. What's this shit doing in my house?
I'm stretching bottles, ma.
You ever see your dad?
Where's everybody at, L.A.?
Man, I don't
sleeping
know. Hungover? It's low today. Man,
but you know you...
Week, but
you
play, New Year's Day. The one first, one person I talked to, she came in at... She stayed out until 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So Robin, I think, takes holidays off. Major holidays off, at least. And then I reached out to Pleasant Steppens and one other person, so it's the first. And when,
you
when's
know,
the next holiday?
Huh?
When's the next holiday?
Valentine's Day.
I mean, you know, bank holiday.
President's Day.
Well, that's next month?
February, yeah.
Yeah.
February the 12th or something.
Yeah, because for the next 2 months, a lot of people have to recover from all this money they spent the last 2 or 3 months. So,
you know,
I guess tomorrow will be normal.
You know, they was talking about Marva Collins School,
mm-hmm.
which was designed to produce people in the liberal arts. But folks like Mr. Johnson don't like that type of school.
Oh, you talking about Omar Johnson?
Yeah, and a lot of other ones. Reason why? Because you got kids learning how to read Shakespeare, Canterbury Tales, And
oh yeah, yeah. Umar's the polar opposite of all that stuff.
Right. And some of the things that they be talking about is totally ridiculous. You know what I say? If you like that, why don't you just do it with your kids and your family? Leave everybody else alone. And stop claiming to others that they meet a certain style or deficiency, really what it is, if they don't go along with the ideas that you do. But anyway.
I think he secured a building finally somewhere in Delaware, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So he got that part of, because they people were on his case real hard for over a year, probably almost 2 years, but he secured a building. So, and I think his target date is to open at that location is August of this year. And but he's still raising money because he says he's going to need $1 million. You know, I don't think when he started out, I don't think he factored in maintenance.
No, he didn't. Don't seem like it. Ain't nobody going, you going to raise, you going to have a school that you're going to still depend on donations to operate it.
Right.
Or anything. Just think about that.
You're right.
It don't make any sense.
Absolutely right. I don't know how he, and I'm not knocking what he's doing, but no one person can see the whole picture. I think it would have been, you know, I don't know if he's got a mastermind team. If he's got like a team, you know, five people, I don't know. Because like you say, that it appears at first, for quite a while, matter of fact, he didn't factor in maintenance or, and I'm not even going to go into the taxes part, and insurance part. But anyway, he secured a building, so he's got that done. But now he's got to raise money to, you know, to put, you know, roof and any kind of repairs that need to be made. You know what? Actually, he would have been better off, in my opinion, building his own place or starting off small with a, you know, maybe even a storefront. But anyway, that's just my opinion.
L.A., them places, it's only been a handful of schools that survived. Marcus Garvey they never survived to the greatest potential. Marcus Garvey in South Central L.A. has been around for a long time, but it never have survived to its greatest potential. You had the Council of Independent Black Institutions, CIBI. They had over 71 or 80 schools across the country. Right now, they're down about maybe three. People do not, unless you have vouchers, like what President Trump has been proposing. Okay. With school choice, people don't pay that money.
Right.
Unless you got people who have the ability to pay for it. But
right.
The people with the ability to pay for it, you have a lot of blacks that pay upwards of $40,000 a year for preschool.
True.
Preschool
through
high school.
I don't know what the numbers on that, but I imagine that percentage has got to be low.
Well, but they make up, the students that come out of these schools make up about 40% of your MIT's enrollees.
Okay.
Fairview or Fairfield, I always get the name construed. That's $80,000 a year. And there's one brother from, the Gambian, Samba, he had two daughters in that school. And then they went on to get free admission. I think they went into Duke.
Okay.
And they came out and went straight to work. One of them is working for Ralph Ellison's Operation Oracle. I think she's started off $89,000 a year. Her sister started off at $87,000 working from some law firm, I believe. I'm not sure.
You know what? He just gave me an idea. I'm going to call some of my academic people, university professors and whatnot, and see if I can get them on here tomorrow as a panel. I'm going to take a look at education.
There's another school out there called Horace Mann. It's more of them than you think that has a high percentage of black students and where the tuition is, you know, upwards of $40,000 a year. Fairview is exceptional.
I think there's a black boarding school, I think in Mississippi. I forgot the name of that school.
It's Piney Grove.
That's it.
You only got three left boarding schools. That's all black. I think the other ones out there on the coast, Carolina and South Carolina, Piney Grove and Port Gibson, Mississippi.
What you know? Tuition is for Piney Grove?
I think it's around $20,000, or maybe a little less.
I'm looking it up now. Piney Grove Boys Academy. Oh, well, hold it. Piney Grove or Piney Woods?
Piney Woods.
Okay. Let's see. Tuition. I wish they were already. Tours, open house, tuition and financial assistance. I mean, I don't want to be emailing nothing. Gee, let's put it out here. All right, I'm on their website. There's got to be an answer here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we'll take your word for it. That's 20-something a year, right?
I think it's 20-something. I think it's about 20, maybe less a year.
Okay.
It's not that many black boarding schools. It's down about, never was a whole lot.
That's true. Well, yeah, and there were, I'm going to line up.
Four African-American boys school. Let me see here.
Yeah, African-American schools that were started by African-Americans, including law school and medical schools. I think there might only be, I think there are no more than maybe five at best black African-American law schools and maybe only three black medical schools. You got one here in Central Florida. You got Howard University. And there's one more.
You got Piney Woods. You got Pine Forge Academy. That's in Philadelphia. Larenburg.
That's in North Carolina?
Larenburg is in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. That's it. Larenburg, Pine Forge. Redemption Christian Academy.
I'm going to line up some people tomorrow, and we're going to get into education. Take a look at education.
The Redemption is located in New York.
Okay. Piney Grove School. Let me see. All right, we'll have all that information by them.
All right, well, I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, then. Have a good one. Thanks for calling in.
All right, you too.